Blog Talk Radio.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. Watch that sound. Everybody look what's going down.
Good evening, and this is the Sunday Show on Here Be Monsters Radio with my co-host Jack Jodell up in Minnesota, and Wayne Johnson of Ohio. And I suppose it's one of those Sundays that we all sit back and think about how fortunate we are and be grateful for the good stuff in life, because we have to listen to so much horror coming over the wires at us. It's been a lousy morning in Texas.
Oh.
People dying, people shooting.
And needlessly.
And you know, Jack, you said something when we first connected up today, something about, you know, it's got to be better because he's out of the country. And I'm thinking, you know, since we've had these problems for forever, I mean, human society has had them, but America is like the poster child for guns on the planet.
Oh.
And since the 45 has come into our office and done what he's been doing, the violence and the nastiness just on the everyday street corner. I have a friend on Facebook, Wayne probably knows, seen her post. Her name is Liz D'Annunzio. You know whose wife she is, Jack? She's Manny's wife, Manny Jelonski.
Oh, yeah, great. Okay. I never knew his last name.
Yeah, River Manny. And he's still publishing his paper out there in Brooklyn and doing his best left position. He's really a wonderful man. He really works for his community. And Liz is his wife. She's a programmer, a code writer, and she's a pretty cool gal. But she posts regularly on her, you know, her daily ride into work in Manhattan and observing people and what's going on. And as much as, you know, as small as like giving the eye, the stink eye, as they say, to a guy sitting down in a seat on the subway that a pregnant woman is standing up in front of him, you know, really that seat kind of thing, to seeing stuff written on the subway wall that just, you know, promoting white supremacy or something. I think she's taken to carrying one of those big Sharpie pens with her so she can cross it out on the tile. But there's so much going on in society right now. And today, this afternoon,
well, we've had a huge upswing in mass murders, and it's just been I've never seen anything like it. You know, I remember one of the very first mass murders. I was quite a bit younger. It was in 1966, I think, at the University of Texas, one of the branches. And some guy got in a bell tower and shot a bunch of people down.
I thought of it too. I was a kid. I thought of it too. Started in Texas. Yeah.
Who would have ever known that it would become almost a daily occurrence?
You turn on, even I rarely listen to local news. My sister listens to it, but actually, I thought maybe I should start listening to local news. There's better news in it. There's more good news in it. And then there was another thing that came up this week, and that's the bombshell book that dropped by Donna Brazile on the DNC.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Well, you know, geez, Jack, you know, as well as
well,
I do.
Well, we knew Debbie Wasserman Schultz was a piece of crap. We knew that.
She and Bo need to step up on that one, because Hillary was running for president. She got it thrown in her lap, and she ran with it best she could by the time the convention came around.
She was vying for a cabinet seat, I think.
But here, well, Brazil and Clinton don't get along. Remember, she ran Al Gore's campaign, and she told Al Gore to stay the hell away from Clinton. So there's bad blood there. But the thing is that I think that basically, you, Jack, I mean, Wayne, it's like we know these campaigns, RNC, DNC, the Green Party, any one of them, they can go broke like four times a year. And constantly raising money. This is one of the problems with politics.
Oh, I get three calls a week at least from one of the parties wanting money. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
I get a lot of email slaughter. No matter how many times I even got Michelle Obama asking me for money. I'm like,
oh, I know, it's insane, yeah. And you know what's sad is that Mr. Obama did very little, really. He raised a lot of money for himself and his election campaigns, but he did very little for the party.
Well, why do you think he was on the road stomping with Hillary? He was raising money for her. He knew it was broke.
For her.
Raising money
that's
for her.
That's different, though. You know, that's different. That for a presidential campaign is different than for the party.
Yes, it is. But here's the thing. In every district that he campaigned in, he made sure that there was money in the coffers for those who were running on a ticket, for Democrat ticket there. He did. I kept my eye on all that stuff because I gave during the election. I would give $5 whenever I could, but I gave to Hillary, the DNC. The DNC has got a lot to do before it gets my little $5, $10 donation.
They're not a very good organization. They're not very effective for one thing, and they leave a lot to be desired, really. As does the RNC.
Well, the GOP. Well, let's go by the politicians and not the machine that, you know, takes care of them. The politicians themselves, I don't think there's no since Ike. I don't think that there's been plenty of politicians called themselves Republicans and acted like them for a while, but after Reagan, you know, and what's the famous quote this week? The famous quote this week is, I think the Republican Party died after my presidency. Guess who said that?
Oh, that was Herbert Walker Bush.
Yep.
Daddy Bush.
Yep. Yeah, he and his son came out with the book on anti-Trump book, which is very interesting. A lot of passages in there are very anti-Trump.
Well,
of course, Trump did in the other brother, you know. So I guess that's to be expected.
What they're doing now is they're Hail Marying their legacy and history. That's what they're doing.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, in my estimation, that's what they're doing. But here's another interesting thing that came out and got time on CNN, not MSNBC so much, which is really strange. She had done I think she might have done something with Andrea Mitchell, I'm not sure, but Caroline Kennedy is commemorating the centennial birthday of her father this month. She came out with a video on him and how his legacy should go forward and all of that. And, of course, the Democrats, the machine is trying to push that they're going to, you know, have her running it's possible she's going to run for office. Well, she was an excellent ambassador to Japan, and she was the only politician I ever read was trying to do something to bring global leaders to the problem of Fukushima. And she knew exactly what kind of health risks she was taking being ambassador to Japan and where she was the whole time, which was very real. And she's smart cookie. She's really quite brilliant. And, of course, she's got
always
the kid biology around her. When Barack Obama was running, she wasn't used to public political speak. And she got run over by a couple of journalists that just sort of threw her in the, you know, mishmash, and she backed off of it. But she did accept that ambassadorship. She learned while she was doing it. And she's very polished now. And if she did, the only thing is, the senatorial seat that she would have to go for is one I don't think she would, because it's Gillibrand.
Yeah.
And Gillibrand is, I mean, I like her. I don't know if you.
Oh, she's been a good senator so far.
I mean, she's the only one. She actually came out in the press and they bleeped her, but she told MSNBC, CNN, coming out of that caucus room, she actually said, "Fuck this."
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
The only place that you could hear it was on YouTube. I mean, she's ballsy as hell. There are good politicians in the Democrat Party. And I would
the what party?
The Democratic Party.
There we go. That's right.
And there's
don't flip that Bush bull crap at me.
I never did get that. Why is that I'm totally lost when you say that.
Well, all this, especially the Southern bad GOP guys, they all call it the Democrat Party, very disparagingly, and it's an insult to everybody who's proclaimed liberal politics from FDR onward. It's not a Democrat Party. It's the Democratic Party. It's always been that until recently. These idiot rednecks down south have been calling it the Democrat Party, real disparagingly, and it's disgusting.
I really was.
And Bush did it all the time.
Well, I'm my mother used to call me a Jimmy Carter Democrat.
Yeah. Oh, even he called it the Democratic Party.
It also would remind me that, you know, there was nothing dumber than a New York Democrat.
Well, sure, she didn't like Tammany Hall. I wouldn't have liked them either.
No, and
they were oppressive. They were oppressive autocrats.
The thing was, my first vote was cast. I was registered in the state of New York. It's where I went to school and lived at the time. But my sister was still registered Republican. Oh, well, I just registered when Mom was. And it's like, whoa. That was until Bush got elected. And, of course, she voted for Gore, and she always voted Democratic.
Oh,
but,
yeah. Right, yeah.
And she changed her party affiliation with Gore, I guess. But there's got to be one or two Republicans out there that are, you know, decent moral characters.
That senator from Alaska and that senator from Maine, opposite ends of the country, and they're both fairly they're not liberal, but they're fairly moderate compared to the rest of those goofs.
I was going to say Wayne, and I still Republican.
And Wayne.
Oh, there's Wayne. Yeah.
Well, his party's left him. This new conservative, this new reactionary trend has left Wayne in the dark.
Yeah,
well,
oh, absolutely.
Well, there's a lot of Republicans, especially, you know, that have become independents now. I mean, look at Joe Scarborough. Joe friggin' Scarborough became an independent.
Oh, yeah. We can thank Trump for that.
George Will, the only conservative, has left the Republican Party. He says they've gotten too stupid for him.
Yeah, no.
He is now independent. He has left the Republican Party.
Right, it's incredible.
I rarely agree with George Will. All this hoo-ha. First of all, I'm not going to say a bad thing about John McCain, because I've always been of two minds about him. I don't agree with his politics. I think they're backward as hell. I think that they're isolationists. I think that his idea of conservative money, but he's also concerned with the environment. He thinks that climate change is real and it's a security threat.
Right.
But the other one, Flake and Corker, they're just mouthing. They've seen it go too far. And,
right.
But they vote with Trump. So, you know.
Most of the time, but we'll see if that trend continues.
I guess.
Corker really, he's a true anti-deficit Republican, and he's very disturbed at this new tax plan. It's such a bogus thing anyway that Ryan's come up with, and it's just disgusting. Anyway, it will severely adversely affect the deficit, make it go way high, and Corker's very upset about that, as is Flake.
I don't, and here's the other thing. Now this Brazil thing has bombed out, and it's got more bullshit running in social media and
news. It's created a big controversy.
The news about, well, not so much on MSNBC. Most of everybody is pretty, I mean, you have.
I've heard discussion of it on MSNBC.
Yeah, but like this morning on Joy Reid, she asked the Republican commentator, who's not a bad fella. He used to be on CNN quite a bit, too. I think he still is. But she asked him, and she said, you know, and he was the one who reminded me, well, you know, this is bad blood, too, between Clinton and Brazil because of the Gore campaign and all of that. But he said, the thing is, and I knew this, I mean, most of us do, these parties run out of money like that all the time. So for her to make it, you know, a mea culpa on her sword, it wasn't her fault, she got thrown a broke party, it's like saying, really? I mean, in the political world, I mean, she's just looking at, I don't know what she's looking at. And I've never been real overly impressed with her. I thought her confident.
I thought she was okay when the few times I saw her interviewed on television. You know, I would like to read her book rather than comment on it from afar like this. I want to see if there's any validity to her, to what she says or not. But it sounded reasonable to me as was first presented on the news. So we'll see. I don't know. It's hard. It's dangerous for us to comment and as if we're know-it-alls about everything, because we're not. And for us to comment on that book and either pro or con without having read it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I have watched your interviews for the last 2 days, and she's pretty much what I'm thinking right now is what she's been saying. I don't think that it's her fault or anything. I do wonder though at her, you know, and it's not her who decided when to put this out. I mean, the publisher's doing that because of the election. But the thing is that parties go broke all the time. But there was, for her not to have known, for her to have walked into that without any foreknowledge, she's correct. That should have never happened, and that's Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who should be robbed and pounded out of politics.
Yeah, she's terrible. I've never, you know, I liked her at first when I first saw her. I forget what, I used to see her, I can't remember what show, but I used to see her on news shows once in a while interviewed, and she seemed reasonable at the time, but I didn't realize really what a snake in the weeds she really is.
I worked beside her in the Obama campaign of 2008. And I mean, right beside her, I can talk to her. I know she's bought my product.
Right.
But she, I watched her dress down a bunch of kids who were doing their best. And
you mentioned that. I remember that, yeah.
What kind of person she was. And I said, oh, no, she's not, you know. And, she, of course, I'm not in her, I'm no longer in her district.
Great circles, yeah, right.
But I do know a lot of people who are, and I can tell you she has a great anchor with a lot of them because it's primarily elder, still liberal, if you will, Jewish community.
Jewish community, yeah. Very much so, yeah.
Another half of it that is a real powerhouse is the LGBTQ community down there.
I didn't know she was that supportive of. That's fine, whatever.
Oh, no, that's her district. And yes, she has been supportive, but they're not supportive of her anymore.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, you know, you can't sell shit and dress it up as caramel. And she's trying to sell shit, even though she's you know, she is as though it's caramel, but it's not. It's just bullshit. So.
Well, she's pulled a lot of crap, and she won't go in front of the camera, and she avoids interaction with anyone, and one wonders why she's even there anymore.
Maybe she'll be primaried out. Let's hope, huh?
Well, there's already three candidates that are vying for it.
There you go. Let's hope one of them wins.
I hope so, too. But that also, I think that also this should be, like I was saying, Brazil should have never walked in unknowing. And there's a responsibility for who put her in charge, and that was Barack Obama. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, in Brazil's defense, I can say this, because sometimes candidates, even though they're affiliated with a party and endorsed by a particular party, they don't understand the actual workings of the party. And that's where the hands get dirty and soiled and the garments get torn. And a lot of them are not used to that. They have not experienced it. They're able to just coast along with party backing and get the offices that they obtained. But, and you know, I don't think I can totally blame her for having walked in and been surprised like that, because I don't think that would be totally unusual for most of the party candidates, regardless of party.
No, I agree with you. You can't be blindsided like that and think that. I mean, Wayne, you've worked on campaigns before. You know how financing goes. It's like
there's an old adage that says, "You know, money is the lifeblood of politics. If you run out of blood, you're dead."
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely true. We have a candidate down here who's running for now the congressional seat that's coming up. It's been filled by Alan West's protege, Brian Mast, and he's a horrible person.
Yeah.
With horrible Trumpian, you know, go along, get along, kind of like the governor of Puerto Rico. And Pam Keith is running against him. I think she has a really great chance. The Democratic machine down here, run by Debbie Wasserman Schultz, by the way, is the reason that Patrick Murphy, instead of Grayson or anyone else getting that slot.
Yeah, against, corporatist Democrats.
Yeah, was because, and Patrick Murphy is a fraud. He's a complete utter fraud, but he was a corporate Dem push-in. He was one of Wasserman Schultz's choices. So, he's out. But Pam Keith was a JAG lawyer, and she's worked for several nonprofits, and she knows her business, and she's personable, and my impression of her is one that's very positive. I think she's a good candidate. I think she's honest, and she has my attention, I should say. And she's making the rounds in Florida right now. She was just here in Port St. Lucie doing a thing at a Rotary Club where she invited, and she's a woman of color. So,
great.
She's a pretty lady too. And she has a bit of a sense of humor, but it comes out oddly. I think she's very business-minded, or, you know, she's a lawyer. She was
a lawyer.
So she's like very careful with her words. But when she does get personable, she's very appealing to people. Because you can tell she's being genuine and sincere. It's not, it's off the cuff. It's not practiced. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. You know, years ago, maybe 3 or 4 or 5, maybe 5 years ago at most, I did a study on every member of Congress and what their origins, their origins were and what their work, line of work was. And the overwhelming majority of them were involved with law. And it makes sense because you need, if you're going to write law, you need to know what's constitutional, what's not, and what's realistic and what's impractical. So I don't have a problem with that. But when it's one, if it's completely one-sided, that can be a problem. You need some input from different businesses and farmers and everybody else, you know. But the overwhelming majority was lawyers. I can't remember the exact figure now. I'll have to do my research on it and dig it up again. But I was astounded to see that a huge amount of the office holders were based in law. They were either attorneys or had some experience in law itself. And it was assuring. At the same time, it was rather astounding and rather disappointing to a certain extent, because I thought there'd be more diversity and there really wasn't.
Well, one of the things that grabs me every time, Jack, is that, first of all, to be even on a community board, you know, a city commission, you have to have some brains. And a lot of assholes walk in with a lot of chutzpah and bullshit and get in the job and do a very bad job of it because they don't have what they
and
need.
And hopefully, most of the time, they're weeded out ahead of time. Not always, but many times.
No, and the other portion of people that go into politics on a larger scale, maybe more on the national side and on the state house side too, are people who've been in business, who've either built their own business or something like that. And that's because they're leaders. And that's what it's about, leadership.
Have to coordinate different elements to make their product or their service sell. And that takes some doing as well. And that's why they excel in politics.
Yes, organizational skills. And right down to bottom, you can love somebody a lot and think they're wonderful people and have every good intention, but if they don't know how to do the job, I mean, we're looking at a primary example of someone who is full of bullshit and does not know how to do the job, and our country is going to hell. We have no allies left. If anybody thinks we've got an ally out there, they're lying to you. They're lying. People are scared of what's going to happen to the world economy because of his big mouth.
Everybody's nervous about Trump. Everybody is.
Everybody. And it's incredible that, but this is the mirror that we've been given. And there's a reason for it. I very much realize that all these shootings, everything, you guys know me, I'm on the woo-woo side of things here. But there's a reason that these things are happening, and I think it's to wake humanity up. We've got 7 billion plus on the world right now, and we can no longer go down the road with the same sort of social mores of, you know,
it's a time of change, and how it's going to change is dependent on us, and it's also, we don't know at this point. It's unknown.
Well, it's called paradigm shift. You know, it's like one of the things that would shift, and I don't know why people haven't really talked more about this, but you know about bitcoins, right? And all of that. The electronic currency and stuff. You know what would put this world on a more equal economic level and people having their own? Everybody who has a smartphone or a computer, and let me tell you what, there are billions of people on this planet who have no bank account, but they do have a smartphone. And if they were enabled to use something, if they were enabled to gather an income through Bitcoin or some kind of currency that way, that will bring economy, it will bring a cohesion to people being able to take care of themselves. And the banks and the oligarchs and the autocrats and everyone who's been so greedy are real scared of that. They're scared of Bitcoin.
And they should be. And, you know, that's a healthy development. And I like to see that the project for the New American Project or whatever it is. We've had a representative on in the past year. They're very far reaching with their thoughts, and they're very insightful, and they've got it all scoped out, not down to the T, but they've got a lot of it. They're on the right track, and they're really advocating the establishment of worker co-ops as opposed to corporations, and that is a healthy development.
Yeah, I like it.
It's more
too.
Democratic. It's economically democratic. I like it.
Argentina has also Argentina has also accepted Bitcoin. Is it in their stock market? But anyway, they're recognizing Bitcoin as being a legitimate aspect of their economy down there in Argentina.
Well, I work.
Good. We need healthy alternatives.
I work with PayPal as my main function of money taking and sending, and which is real good because for a little business like me, they keep all the records and everything. I just to download something to give to my accountant. And I accept Bitcoin. And it's rare that anybody uses it, but I have Bitcoin in a Bitcoin account for my business, which I've not used because I've only had one or two purchases by Bitcoin. But it's my way of getting an anchor into it. And there are companies abroad who are starting to really push, well, we'd rather do business through Bitcoin. And those companies are companies that are small entrepreneurial, but they've got money backing them. Like essential oil producers. I only know my community guys, so I can only go there. But and some farmers and a few people who sell things like there's a company and it's not India, it's an African company, but they make some of the largest collection of little shell fetishes and things you see on tchotchkes and in shell shops and stuff like that. And they pushing me to use Bitcoin with them. And, you know, I mean, it's slow coming. It's slow coming because the banks are doing everything they can to step on it.
Sure.
Well, banks and insurance companies and all their related allies, I just can't stand the very thought of them because they've all become so corrupt and intertwined, and they're oppressive. They really are, and we need a new system in the worst possible way. And anything we can do to facilitate that, I am all for.
Well, you know, The Intercept published a piece the Amazon Amendment, which effectively would hand government purchasing power over to Amazon. Amazon represents a lot of small companies that they pressure. They're like Walmart. Walmart does the same thing. Here's the other side of that. You have these sites like, I don't know if you guys have heard of them, but it's big. It's called Etsy. Bunch of little makers and such like myself. And these people are eking out their living by creating what they do. Some are soap makers. Some make, I mean, you can find just about anything on Etsy. I've seen some Edison lighting that is fabulous on Etsy, and it goes everywhere from like $3 items all the way up to $300,000 items. And it's all entrepreneurial, all self-starters, all little makers, and they're doing a good job. There's a couple of other communities like that.
We know that that's where the majority of job creation comes from, are the small entrepreneurial companies, and that's a healthy thing, because the corporations, they get very, very conservative, and they don't want to change anything, and they get very, very stiff with their money. And they're not much. There's not a hell of a lot of innovating by comparison going out of that sector.
Well, you know, I just did a deal with my own business where I'm supplying my own creation to a larger company that is a small startup like me, but they are growing big. I mean, they're selling Sephora and Urban Outfitters, and Saks Fifth Avenue's even come to them for some beauty products. And I recognized 5 years ago, because of who I am and what I do, I recognized they were going to become the first branded metaphysical, you know, national and international branded company. And they like me. I like the girls. I work with them, and they know that I'm good at what I do. I'm actually one of the best in this country, certainly, if not elsewhere, at what I do in my field.
Well, you certainly got a nice little niche going there, Gwen. That's very good. So.
But I have some very big sellers that are sort of signature.
Great.
And they're buying by the pound. And if they buy by the pound per month from me, and I've been working on this for a year, it will take care of my overhead and let me begin to actually make some money, which is, whoa, what is that?
Oh, that's good.
But my point is that they employ me, a bunch of other little makers, in fact, you know, to bring to what they do, which is, these gals are smart cookies. They grew up in the real estate field in Los Angeles, and they created what they wanted from their hearts with a little store. And I'm going to give them a plug. It's called House of Intuition, and their tagline is, your intuition led you here. Now, in my community of metaphysical, new age, what have you, that's quite a tagline, isn't it? Your intuition led you. And they have nice folks working for them, and they have integrity. And they're also very much about prosperity. They want to make money, and they're doing it, but they're not doing it by, you know, walking over folks. They're trying to
grabbing any opportunity they can to screw somebody. No, they're doing it systematically and structurally and very sound. Very good innovation.
Yeah, and there's a lot of these little, and I would actually call them a kind of a metaphysical co-op in the big marketplace. And I think there's a lot of the, because I know I work with, well, I'm proud to say that two people that I actually worked for me many years ago and then went out on their own are now doing the same kind of gig, only in their, you know, corner. One's Mother House of the Goddess, and another is Murphy's Essentials, a few other companies. And we're all part of a group of people that are working on our own, but we refer back to each other. We want mutual prosperity. We're not.
It's kind of a network. It's great. I like it.
Yeah. We do have a caller. I'm going to open up the mic. 347 area code. I've opened your mic. Are you listening in, or did you have something you wanted to say? Hello?
I was listening. Hi, I was listening.
Oh, okay.
Well, welcome aboard.
Thank you.
So these co-ops with people, and especially when you take a look at how many thousands of people are on Etsy or I can't right off the top of my head tell you exactly how many different platforms they are online or what all the particular names of them are. But there are so many right now that are coming up, and they're geared towards certain industries, too. I mean, there's carpenters, and there's, I mean, some of the handcrafted furniture I've seen online is just absolutely stunning, Jack.
As long as it's handcrafted and not stamped out, you know, that's great. There's some individuality there, and that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I agree with you. There's also you know, like the Burning Man has its whole industry, the steampunkers and all of that. Have you seen that stuff?
No, I haven't, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, there's some real fabulous stuff. I mean, my ceremonial hat is now, I got myself a steampunk one. It was a gift. But, I mean, these creators, and they're not just creators. I've seen platforms of, like, entrepreneurial little groups across the country tied up in, and they're accountants who can work for sliding scale. You know, because you got all these little businesses going out there, and one year you might do bang up, the next year you're holding on with your fingernails. Potters, people growing plants and selling them online like the big companies. I mean, it's just everything, and it's all because they connected on this net, you know?
Well, that's great, and like I said earlier, individual entrepreneurship is wonderful. It's really what's made the country. This country wasn't founded on corporations. You know, corporations evolved horribly, I think, in my opinion, over a couple of hundred year period. And I don't know that they've been entirely beneficial. Let me just put it mildly that way.
Do you know who I think started the Great Nasty was, well, you could throw it over to Cornelius, I suppose, but I think the Great Nasty started with Henry Ford. That's the Great Nasty in my book. But the automotive industry really helped to build this country, industrialization-wise.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And let's take an offshoot of that. The Eisenhower infrastructure project of the 50s just revolutionized this country economically, socially, and culturally in so many ways. And that's why we need these roads to be and these bridges to be renewed, rebuilt, and revitalized. And we need it so badly. And people have started talking about it, but nobody's acting about it. And Trump's made all kinds of noise about it, but there is yet to be any bill that has been forged yet that supports such a process or will fund such a project. It's really terrible.
Well, let's face it. We need the roads for our own.
We need it bad.
Infrastructure, if it's just the fuel and the food that is getting to the outer communities, and that's just the truth, from port to, you know, Grover's Corners type of thing down in Illinois or something. But the point is that for me, shipping, I mean, when you start a business, you have to go through. I went through Brown, which I love their people. They're good people. The UPS guys and or gals are always nice and good. They're too expensive. If I want UPS to come and pick up packages, first of all, it takes them 5 days, and they want me to pay them $20 for every run they make to my house to pick up.
And, wow, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, but you know what? I got the United States Postal Service.
Yes, and people complain about it, but that is still the best delivery service in the entire world.
Everything goes through the Postal Service in my company, Priority Mail, and they pick it up on their regular dropping off mail schedule.
Yes, absolutely good.
I know my letter carriers, and they're unionized.
Yeah. I remember years ago, this was in 1980, and in those days I used to wear glasses, and I don't wear glasses anymore, but regardless, I had a spare pair of glasses that I somehow had lost in the country of Belgium, little Belgium, and it's a westernized country, it's a developed country, it has lots of railroads and planes and roads and stuff, and I went to the Netherlands, and I kept calling back to the spot I was at on the telephone to find out if they had located my glasses. Finally, they had found them, and they were gonna send them to me. And I said, "Well, I'm gonna be back in Belgium pretty soon," and I gave them an address I was gonna be at, and I said, "Go ahead and send them. By the time I get there, they'll be there." And you know what? It took a full 5 days to get from, and I saw the postmark. From Brussels, suburb of Brussels, to where I was staying elsewhere in Belgium, and I just was amazed that it took 5 stinking days to get a package delivered in the country of Belgium.
That is a small country. That is it. Now, the United States Postal is, I think, premier.
Incredible.
They really are, and you won't. And I'm going to say something about that other company too. I've never used DHL or, you know, so I have nothing to say about them. But FedEx, kiss my ass. They still owe me for damage.
Sorry. Well, they rose out of a need and the need to get packages somewhere very quickly and all that sort of thing. And so they met their need, but they're not perfect. None of them are perfect, but... they met their need and they're sustaining themselves, and DHL is a copy of them, and you know, they've got certain innovations that are slightly different, but they're basically doing the same type of thing.
Well, I'll tell you, FedEx, I used a lot when my mother was ill, and I had to do business with the banks in Rochester, and they'd have to have it overnight, that kind of thing, so I'd use FedEx.
Right.
Come to find out, I could have done the same thing with the U.S. mail. And I could have done it for $4 less. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. I found out much later. But I no longer send something FedEx unless it's asked of me by a larger entity than myself. If it's
and they want to pay for the price of the postage or the transport,
right.
Yeah.
Well, my customers pay for their postage, but it's Priority Mail. It's reasonable. And
right. Oh, yeah.
See, one thing about the U.S. Postal is they have these little prepaid packages, a small one, which is like a little videotape box, and then they have a medium-sized one and then a large one. Now, they're not huge,
right.
But for what I send out on, you know,
It works fine.
It does, and you get a great deal into them as far as the priority.
Plus, they're traceable. You know, not everybody's traceable, but their stuff is. You may have to pay a small fee for that, or to have a signature or something, but it is traceable, and that's reassuring too.
Oh, you don't have to pay for a signature, nothing extra. If you want to insure, like I'm sending a package out tomorrow to
It only covers the first, like, $100 or $200, though.
Right, and the package is worth about $700. So you know what it's going to cost me to insure it for that with the U.S. Postal Department? Less than $6.
Yeah, a lot, not much money, right.
And it's worth it. And I've had damage. Yeah, that happens. I get it. It's fine. post office, always is good with me about those things. We had the hurricanes that just came through, right? And Harvey hit Texas. I had sent a couple of packages. One went to, was for Arizona, and it got loused up in Texas. And of course, you can't. I just resent the package. But it finally came back to me. It was saturated.
Oh, my.
But my product, except for these two labels, was just great. I mean, I really have a deep appreciation of letter carriers and the U.S. Postal Department.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, this big boogaboo that people have been saying, they've been anti-post office for a long time, and, oh, let's privatize it and all this nonsense they talk about. You know what? We have a great system. And the reason they're trying to do that, they're trying to get rid of as many unions as they can. And the Postal Union is a very strong union, and it's doing its job.
Yes. My letter carrier in Lake Worth was the shopmaster. And she had been that for like 10 years. And she's getting ready to retire. And you couldn't push her around at all. But she was one of the greatest gals I knew. Did her job, but not only that, she cared about all the people she came to know on her route. And that's another thing about the letter carriers. Most of them give a damn.
Right.
Most of them do. And you gotta realize all that walking and sitting and walking and sitting that they do, that's not an easy job.
It's good,
job.
But it does take its toll after a while.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
It's good exercise, but. You know,
it does take its toll after a while. FedEx, I've seen more YouTube videos of FedEx people throwing packages on porches and stuff to know that.
That's the latest trend for them and UPS even. They used to require a signature. Not anymore. They'll just leave it there. They'll leave it there till it either gets stolen or till hell freezes over, whatever comes first.
Well, it's true.
It's terrible. I don't like it at all.
No, even
no accountability.
Even the Post Department has checks, and you have to say whether you want a signature, and I will tell
absolutely.
A customer. You know, you have to tell me to check that off. But the post, I get UPS leaves. In fact, there's a package sitting outside right now. I haven't pulled in yet, of glass. And UPS, but they always knock on the door, and then they honk their horn before they leave.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
And,
or ring the doorbell or whatever.
Yeah, they know I'm around. I have no problem with UPS people. They really... It's the people, it's the luggage handlers, you know?
They beat the hell out of everything.
Oh, God, they throw stuff. I've watched them throw one of my boxes, and I went, oh, my God, that's amazing.
Oh, Lord.
But the UPS people, the drivers and stuff, and they have a hard job, too. That's not easy. I've seen guys picking up boxes that, you know, oh, my gosh, how's your back doing, buddy, you know?
I know, yeah. Yeah, it's something.
But FedEx is different, and not in a good way. So they don't impress me at all. Of course, I could be holding a grudge, but it's just that way. And
well, I've used all of the major shipping people over the years, and not so much recently, but in the last 10 years or so. But prior to that, I used to ship out stuff all the time at various jobs, and UPS at that time was good. They had their overnight and their second day and all that stuff. And in those days, they didn't just dump it on your front doorstep. And I rarely used Federal Express. The only time I did was if somebody requested it. And, I just rarely use it, so I can't really comment on them. But I've always found the mail to be very reliable. Priority mail has been a godsend. It's been wonderful. And first-class mail has been good. And, you know, anything that's carried by humans is susceptible to a breakdown once in a while or not working right or getting delays in delivery or whatever. But by and large, it's a good system, very good.
Well, I actually have a package going out tomorrow, one to San Francisco. The other one's going over to England. And
okay.
It's a 2-pound box. It's first class mail because priority would just kill you. It's still $22, but it'll be probably closer to £3 or something, but it'll go through. They get it done. And it's first class mail, and I do have customers from abroad. And it takes, by the time I ship, it's like 3 to 5 days to get there in first class mail, and I can live with that.
Oh, sure, sure. Overseas, it always takes longer.
But the whole point of this is, though, you know, the U.S. Postal Department has become the number one reason that little guys like me and all these other small makers and entrepreneurs are able
can even export things.
Yeah, I mean, it's wonderful. I know people that have shops on Etsy that are making stuff down in Peru, and they send it up via the mail system. And if you've got a printer and a computer, honey, you can go online. You can even use PayPal to pay for it. That's how I pay for my labels with the postal department instead of having to go through credit cards and all that stuff. They really are quite wonderful, and it's made it possible for all of these small makers, because there's a lot of people out there that are making their living now doing this. And, you know,
good. And the more small business, the merrier. I'm all for it. It's wonderful. You know, small business is more receptive to the people around them, to their customers. They're more responsible toward their customers. They don't just blow them off. And I'm all for that. I like the neighborliness aspect of it. And that's part of it. It's community aspect. It's wonderful.
Customer service is our number one thing. I get calls and I spend time on the phone things to people and everything. And a lot of people have said to me, wow, thank you for spending so much time. And you know,
it
grateful.
Does add up. There's no doubt. No doubt.
Well, it's, you know, it's also part of my job, too. So I'm very happy to do that. And I always tell people, if you have questions, you can call me. I'm very happy to talk with you. So it's
very true. That's great, Gwen.
That.
And that will continue. And I'm very glad to hear that, because so many places are so complacent nowadays and they take everybody and everything for granted. And you don't do that. You work your business very keenly and you're very conscientious about it. And hats off to you for that, Gwen. That's wonderful.
Well, thank you. I'll tell you one place I just want, and everybody knows this practically. Try calling. And once you get to a rep, they're pretty good, I got to say. But friggin' Comcast. wouldn't believe what you got to go through to get to people with some company, some corporation.
Oh, it's terrible. I know. You get one roadblock after another, one desk to another, and they keep shifting around. And by the time you're finally made it, you're out of breath, you're winded, you don't care anymore.
Well, it's not just that. It's these electronic systems that you have to go through.
It's bullshit. Yeah, it's crazy.
Oh, my God. We're at the top of the hour.
Well, everybody, I want to urge you to keep pushing forward. It's all the only way we can go. We can't go backwards anymore. We've got to keep pushing forward. That's the only alternative we have. So keep it up. You can read me at the Saturday Afternoon Post. And, Gwen, we'll talk to you next Sunday, along with Wayne and whoever else may come along. And anybody who wants to call in and listen in, you're more than welcome. We love to have you. So everybody keep pushing forward and have a wonderful week.
Thank you, Jack. I'd like to remind everybody that this is produced by Daughters of Isis, Inc. You'll find us at daughtersofisis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. We do essential oil blends that are based in the many cultures on the planet and the expression of our ancestors. So thank you for listening. And Jack, Wayne, and I will be back next week with whatever guest we get. And that's our show for this Sunday. Again, prayers to the people in Texas who are grieving this evening.